Let's say this all together. Welcome, Yule. Ready? Welcome, Yule. Last night, I attended and participated in the winter solstice celebration here at First Parish. As a community, we gathered and entered into ritual provided by our pagan-loving cadre of folks. We called the corners, let go of what has been clinging to us, burned that holly, lit the Yule log, sang music, and we feasted together. What an amazing time we had on the eve before the longest night. Margaret Adler, in her book, Drawing Down the Moon, explains that this is the time when the goddess suddenly reawakens. She finds that the god has mysteriously departed, but she's pregnant with the god of the coming year. Really, the same god, the Lord's Son himself. Yule is when the sun starts north again, thus promising that the spring will follow the long, cold rest period of winter. One has to wonder how this time of year became such a celebrated occasion of going within and igniting that spark, not just for Wiccans and Christians, but for Hindus and Jews. It's an important time of year for tradition, generosity, and faith. What is our role as Unitarian Universalists in defining and celebrating this holiday? Well, it's different for each one of us. But over the last year and a half as your minister, I've engaged and talked about our Unitarian Universalist principles. Everybody pretty much knows those. But have not shared that much about our UU sources. How many of you know anything about the UU sources? Well, quite a few of you. That's good. Especially the ministers amongst us. But what I want to say is, not so much. Most people don't understand what the sources are and what importance they are to us. And so I thought I would share something that my colleague had written. She wrote, "Throughout history, we have moved to the rhythms of mystery and wonder, prophecy, wisdom, teachings from ancient and modern sources, and nature itself. Worshipping in our congregations, you may hear a reading or perspective shared from any one of these sources from which our living tradition is drawn. Direct experience of that transcending mystery and wonder affirmed in all cultures, which moves us to a renewal of the spirit and an openness to the forces which create and uphold life. Words and deeds of prophetic women and men which challenge us to confront powers and structures of evil with justice, compassion, and a transforming power of love. Wisdom from the world's religions, which inspires us in our ethical and spiritual life. Jewish and Christian teachings, which call us to respond to God's love by loving our neighbor as ourselves. Humanist teachings, which counsel us to heed the guidance of reason and the results of science, and warn us against idolatries of the mind and spirit. And then spiritual teachings of earth-centered traditions, which celebrate the sacred circle of life and instruct us to live in harmony with the rhythms of nature. Those are our sources. Those of us who connect with this last UU source, the nature religions, believe in the importance and equality of both the feminine and the masculine in nature. We honor the masculine properties as seen in the daylight, and the feminine properties as those that exist in the night. There is a fine balance between the god and the goddesses, the light and the night, and to all things and celebrations honoring the various aspects of nature throughout the year. This time of year is all about growth and the promise of the return of the sun. On Wednesday night, we will celebrate Christmas Eve. We will share in story and myth. We will sing hymns, carols, and prepare for one of the holiest days in the Christian calendar, the birthday of Jesus. It was believed by a small Jewish community that gathered around Jesus that he was the Messiah of the Hebrew Bible. And there was many fortuitous things that foretold his coming. Jesus was believed to be one that would save the oppressed. The story unfolds that God descended from heaven into human form, born of a woman. Angels heralded Jesus' specialness, and a star foretold his birth. He was considered to be the light in the darkness, the Word made manifest, the Christ or enlightened one, the Prince of Peace. If we step back a bit, we actually may see some similarities between the stories of Yule and the stories of Christmas. The promise of the birth of the Sun King and the birth of the Sun or the bringer of the light. These two stories actually overlap, as do many of the stories held in world religions about the coming of the light and the struggle that we face in the darkness. These dark days are thought to be filled with spirit and celebration and have been an important part of the turning of the year for over 4,000 years, finding their roots in ancient Mesopotamia. But how did Christmas evolve as we know it today? Let's start with the colors of this celebration. They entered upon the scene with the invasion and domination of Europe by the Romans. People were introduced to a midwinter festival that lasted, of all things, 12 days. I'm sure many of you have sang the popular Christmas carols, the 12 days of Christmas. 5 golden rings, 4 calling birds, 3 French hens, 2 turtle doves, and a partridge in a pear tree. Yes. Thank you, choir. The 12 days of midwinter Roman festival culminated in the birthday of the great sun god. Sound familiar? Sol Invictus, also known as the unconquerable sun. Bum, bum, ba, bum. Romans worshipped both gods and goddesses until they converted to Christianity with the conversion of their Roman Empire, Constantine, in 313 Common Era. He had both Christian and pagan advisors and was considered to be the high priest of the state cult until his death. He held that toleration should be expected and that the persecution of Christians, which had been rampant up to that point, would no longer be tolerated in the Edict of Milan. Constantine, with the help of his advisors, worked to set standards of belief for Christians, and the outcome was the Nicene Creed. And there was a real need to do that. People were just sort of going off developing Christianity any which way they decided. You might remember the Nicene Creed. I believe in one God, the Father Almighty, maker of heaven and earth, and all of the things invisible, invisible. Da-da-da-da-da. Getting everyone on board with Christianity and the Creed was a violent affair, done mainly through conquest. The Roman Catholic clergy followed in the wake of battle, feeding, healing, and burying the dead, building churches over the pagan sites of celebration, and all done with missionary zeal. Being raised by a devout Irish Catholic, I was taught all about St. Patrick, who arrived in Ireland a bit later, during the 5th century. He promptly set about a slow and peaceful conversion of the various kings and important families of Ireland. St. Patrick realized that many of the beliefs of Christianity were in line with the pagan beliefs held by the people of Ireland, which had been practiced and taught by Druids, who were considered to be the early and important priests of Ireland. St. Patrick melded the pagan beliefs with the Christian beliefs, creating a hybrid Christianity that would later be denounced as pagan by the Vatican. Many different cultures and communities around the world would have accepted the Christian teachings, but have wanted to add the important celebrations that they'd grown to love throughout the seasons, one such being the celebration of Yule. So in rides Father Time, also known as Santa Claus, a fellow who is an amalgamation of many different characters. Apparently, Santa Claus was first recognized as Saint Nicholas, a 4th century Christian bishop from Lycia, now in Turkey. Saint Nicholas was known for giving gifts to the poor. Then again, we can see an earlier glimpse of Santa among the Germanic tribes. One of the major deities of these tribes was Odin, the ruler of Asgard. He shared a number of similarities with our modern-day Santa Claus. Odin was often depicted as leading a hunting party through the skies, during which he rode his 8-legged horse. Now that is a very serious horse, who was able to leap great distances. Odin was typically portrayed as an old man with a very white beard. When Dutch settlers arrived in New Amsterdam, they brought with them their practice of hanging stockings out for St. Nicholas / Odin. They also brought the name Sinterklaas, which later morphed into Santa Claus. Although the Dutch version of St. Nicholas was written about by the author Washington Irving around 1809, it was about 15 years later that the figure of Santa as we know him today was described. This came in the form of a narrative poem by a man named Clement C. Moore. a Unitarian professor of Oriental and Greek mythology who wrote about Santa in a famous ditty. You might remember it. 'Twas the night before Christmas when all through the house not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. The stockings were hung by the chimney with care in hopes that St. Nicholas soon would be there. Yes. Unitarian. Over the last couple of centuries, Unitarians have contributed significantly to defining what the celebration of Christmas might actually look like. In 1835, a Unitarian minister, Charles Fallon of Lexington, Massachusetts, set up the very first Christmas tree recorded in American history. He desired that he, as he described it, was to have his son see the beauty of Christmas tradition of his German heritage. He hoped that the decorated tree and not the gifts would become the central surprise of the Christmas season. And he hoped that somehow gift-giving would become more important to children than gift-receiving. I'm not sure if we've achieved that yet. In 1843, A Christmas Carol by Unitarian Charles Dickens was published. We all know the story of Scrooge facing the ghosts of Christmas past, present, and future that led him to renew his life and embrace the importance of generosity and compassion during this giving season. We Unitarians have been pretty much in there. Santa Claus, the trees, the greens of Christmas, the flowers, the candles, the food and feasting, and the birth of a baby, which is the most hopeful experience of all, are shared to help us maintain perspective during the darkest time of year. Tonight being the longest night of this year. It doesn't really matter if we're pagans, Christians, Jews, Buddhists, Hindus, or Unitarian Universalists. We share common threads, regardless of what our specific individual beliefs or practices may be. The reality is that we have been living in the cold and dark over these long nights and short days. And do we see them? Do we see them as a burden or as a time of opportunity? Is the glass half full or half empty? For me, it's all a matter of perspective. This week we arrive at midwinter, and the promise of the return of light is at hand. This is very good news. I do like rituals of the Advent candles and Advent calendar that the Christians honor as a way to mark the passing of these weeks, because, you know, it does kind of get kind of gray in New England. Each week we are reminded of hope, peace, joy, and love, candles that bring warmth and light and remind us of a way of being in relationship with something transcendent outside of ourselves. Dare we call that something God or spirit of life and love or universal energy or Adonai or Allah? We light candles and Yule logs to feel safe in the dark. We light them to bolster our faith, faith in that something outside of ourself thing, or faith in one another, or faith that the sun will in fact return to the northern hemisphere once again. All right, maybe not quick enough, but it is coming. As Christians and pagans, Jews, Hindus, Muslims, mystics, Zoroastrians, Buddhists, humanists, agnostics, and atheists, we can find meaning in the darkness. We can find and understand the miracle of birth and the hope that new life, light, brings to the world. We can find a sense of commonality in our own particular practice of faith. I'm not talking about blind faith here, but informed faith. What might that look like, informed faith? The definition of faith explains that it is a confidence or trust in a being, object, living organism, deity, view, or in the doctrines of teachings of religion, as well as confidence based on some degree of warrant. It can also be belief that is not based on proof. The word faith is often used as a synonym for hope, for trust, or for belief. During this time of year, what do we trust or believe in? Where does our faith lie? In my heart of hearts, I hope that our faith resides with and in one another, and our generosity of heart and spirit. And yet sometimes in reading or hearing or watching the news on a day-to-day basis, something disappears, our faith. Yet sometimes it isn't. I'd like to share a story with you about a couple that I know who live in Florida. I've known them for several years. One of the couple, the breadwinner, was diagnosed with breast cancer in 2009. and she has been struggling desperately to live with and survive cancer over the last 5 years. It has not been easy for her or her spouse because the cancer was diagnosed rather late in the cycle, stage 4. To say that their lives have been affected and changed by this disease is an understatement. Surgery last October of a double mastectomy resulted in a bad infection, life-threatening. And my friend was hospitalized more this fall than not. Their lives are now about doctors, chemo, radiation, and never-ending medications. What was once a comfortable way of life for them has now become a daily struggle to pay doctor bills and buy groceries, not alone pay the mortgage, and put new brakes in their car, which they realized this Thursday needed to be replaced. Ugh. They need the car because public transportation in Florida, if you've ever tried to get around on the bus, is pretty much impossible. It's the worst system in the nation. And they have doctor's visits and medication and groceries to buy, and so they went to the local mechanic and heard the bad news that the brake repair would cost them just under $500. They would have to make a choice: pay the mortgage, buy medication, or get the brakes in their only car fixed. I will be the first one to own the fact that these are really first world problems. But this news literally made them both cry as they stood in the waiting room of the mechanic. They had just had enough. They were up to the top with it. And so they went outside to compose themselves and strategize about their options. They made the decision together and came back in to inform the mechanic that they would fix the car. Then, of course, the real worrying began: how to make it all work out. They waited as the car was repaired. There was no other option. It took a couple of hours. And then they were informed that their vehicle was ready, and they went up to the counter. I'm not sure if you know that feeling, what it's like worrying about the imminent financial burden, especially for those surviving on the edge, just teetering one injury or diagnosis away from homelessness. It is a debilitating, that financial worry is as debilitating as the disease itself. And so many individuals and family in our country, first world or not, are living right there on that edge, day in, day out. Time came to pay, and the wallet was pulled out, and the mechanic, with a big smile on his face, said, "Not to worry about it, your bill's been paid." My friends were stunned, and they sputtered. Then he went on to explain, "Earlier, there was a person who saw what was going on, and they were waiting for their car as well. And when they went to pay their bill, they said, you know, I want to pay their bill as well." And they both literally began to cry. But this time it was tears of joy and appreciation at the selfless generosity the stranger had shown. Then, of course, the mechanic cried. The people in the garage all came in, and guess what? They cried as well. In one act of selfless generosity, this benefactor changed the lives for the better. And not just those lives of those people with the car. They removed that burden. But when they shared their story with me on Thursday evening, my faith in humankind was renewed. And I hope you're hearing this story and you feel the same way. I cried when they told me the story. They cried when they told me the story. One act of selfless generosity. During this holiday season, we can have hope, joy, peace, and love. I would also encourage us this time of the year to have faith. Faith that in the darkest of times, that the potential for something amazing to happen is right here if we're open to it. At the very least, we can have faith that the days will get longer from this point forward, and that spring followed by summer are on their way. This is a time of year for us to celebrate as one community, a congregation that honors all beliefs, because we honor one another and our respective journeys. This is the message that Jesus, the Prince of Peace, endeavored to share and teach to the world, that we can love, be selfless at times and generous of mind, heart, and spirit, even in the face of persecution. That simple acts of generosity can and do change the world. This is what Yule and Christmas are really all about. My friends, let me tell you a little secret. The cup is always half full. So let us generously and joyfully share these holy midwinter days with one another in the spirit of this season, a spirit that holds within it birth, rebirth, transformation, and love. Oh, and yes, of course, Santa Claus. For this we pray. Blessed be. Amen.